Blog Talk Radio.
Radio on September 4th, 2011. Thank you for joining us for the pre-show. We were just playing some music from Jill Matson. She's going to be our guest today. Very happy about that. Happy about all of you with us on chat and listening to the show. This will be Jill's third time with us, and that's because she has written a book, and it's in three parts. And Jill is not only an author of a lot of books about sound and sound healing, she is an author of mostly books about sound healing, but her passion is any kind of sound, any kind of music. She is a great violinist. She paints lots of great pictures. I'll see if I can show you some of her pictures. Those of you who are on with us at Blog Talk, can also be on with us at WebEx. So on the chat, I have put up the address. And for those of you on WebEx, you'll see some of her art flying by here as some of her album covers. So she is very versatile, has lots and lots of talents, and I was totally impressed with what Jill can do. She approached me at an expo and said, "I love your work. I'm going to write a book about you." You know, when a lot of people come up and say, "I want to do a movie about you, I want to do a book about you," and they rarely follow through. They have very good intentions, they just don't have the time or the willpower to carry it through. But I thought, yeah, here's this sweet little petite woman with this great, smiling, wonderful face. Yes, she'll come up and do a book. But Jill surprised me, and within a month or so, she had the beginning of a manuscript, and she started interviewing me and interviewing my family and people that I had worked with, and up comes this incredible book, Sound Secrets, Ultimate Healing. And the first part is about my life and not a lot of people know about. And the second part, ideas about what makes all of this sound healing work. And then the third part has a lot about antiquities. We've given away several of these books. Any of you who have read it, please chime in, either on Blog Talk or WebEx. I'll put up the chat there, because there's three or four of you up and running on that. So this is a recorded session with Jill. We recorded it last Friday because Jill couldn't be with us today. And it answers lots of questions about antiquities and how people used sound to manipulate, and how it has moved into sound for recreation, entertainment. But you'll find very interesting how sound used to be used as a manipulative tool by the politicians and also by the church. Next week, we are going to be having a show about 9/11. It's going to be a story that you've probably never seen published anywhere. If any of you would like a copy of some of the papers we're going to put out, please just write to me at sherryedwards@gmail.com, and that's Sherry with an A, S-H-A-R-R-Y, because we're going to expose something that will likely be controversial. I want you guys to know up front. And it also deals with this idea of how the government is using sound to manipulate. So I am going to go ahead and play the interview that we did with Jill, and I'll jump in. I'll be answering questions on the Blog Talk chat and also on the chat that we have open at WebEx. So Jill, welcome to the show. Well, it's supposed to play. Well, wouldn't you know it, the thing will not play at all. That's a stop, that's a go, that's a play. That is just really weird, right? That won't play.
I think whenever I do something, I just follow my heart. It might sound overly simple, but it's really quite a powerful way to work. And I was very drawn to your work, and I felt very quickly about the depth and the significance of it. I understand that very shortly in the future, sound's going to be our medicine. It's going to be like our everything. It's the technology of tomorrow, and I know that. And I think your work is incredibly significant, and the world will be greatly blessed by understanding it and coming to see the value and the benefits, which are multifaceted. It's kind of like your work is kind of like a theory or a process for healing everything. You can work with pollutants and purify them. You can work with sound and your work to heal your body, and you can work with sounds to heal another's body, or perhaps work on a personal issue, and the list goes on. So it's a multifaceted, like multidimensional tool, and it needs out there. So that's why I wanted to write the book. I think I just follow my heart. It's like I'm very good at kind of like pulling my attention into my feelings, not my thoughts. And when something feels good and kind of like makes my body vibrate, I just go for it. And I find there's wisdom in my feelings, and there's intelligence in my feelings. And I might not cognitively always understand them, but the following my feelings has never set me astray. And when I start to study a discipline, sometimes even see a book, you know, you can feel how deep it is. Just a subtle feeling.
Is that how your need to look at all of this sound healing in antiquity came about too?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it was kind of a personal story. It was 20-some years ago. I was pretty much into very conservative Christianity, and I was very sincere about it. And my son, who was 8 at the time, he had to write this essay in class on Imagine the Magic of a Computer. And I just had a baby who had colic, and was quite cranky, and my older boys watched the coffee baby when I did the dishes, and they didn't like that. So his essay was that he was going to have a computer that would have a hologram of a mother, so that you could throw all baby brothers into the playpen, and they'd be happy because the mother's right there. And then all little boys could go off and play computer games. Anyway, Microsoft apparently liked it, and he won this contest, and his prize was a computer and to go see Bill Gates. And being 8 years old, he could care less about seeing Bill Gates' part, but was very excited about a new computer game. Anyway, it was a big deal because it was publicity for Bill Gates to have him seen with a bunch of little kids that won this contest. So anyway, I was very taken by his idea, and since I was into Christianity, I decided to write the Bible as an autobiography, just from God's point of view. And I used my son's ideas, and I made it like God was a computer maker and people were holograms, and I kind of made the Bible like a big role-playing game. And as I started to go through the Bible, I had problems because right off in the beginning in Genesis, God likes one's gift and not the other, and I thought that was kind of unkind. And then he throws them out into the multitude, but I thought there was only them. Anyway, you go on and on and on. And I guess I had had a lot of dogma with my faith. And by this exercise of writing this book, I realized that either God had PMS or this book was written by people and was influenced by the writer. You know, it wasn't like every word was divine, like I'd been taught. And so I had like a paradigm shift, and it was kind of exciting because I finally decided that God was love. And if I read anything in any holy text that was counter to that, then I was going to disregard it. And I made that decision, and I was meeting clairvoyant, clairaudient, the whole nine yards. It was like a conversion, like a dogma. It's like I had to flush myself of dogma. And then after that, I didn't quite give up on this Bible business, so I decided to search. There's got to be a better Bible. So I went into the Serpentine, and then I eventually got to the Kabbalah, and then I started getting into religious doctrines. And I went from, I did you know, ones related to John the Beloved, and then, you know, neighboring religions and how they dovetailed, and then eventually I got into the Chinese and the Hindus, and I got all these different religious texts, and I just love music, so anytime I found anything about Sound of Music, I wrote it down, and I'm just following my heart again, because I'm reading these texts, I see something about music, and it's like I just feel great. So I write it down, and, 8 years later, I had about 3 feet of notes. And I guess I began to realize that this was my path in life, was to bring forth information on sound. And when I did all this studying, reading hundreds and hundreds of antiquity texts, I learned that music wasn't music as it is today, say it's entertainment, but then it was to control populations, or it was to take a disciple and raise them to the level of an adept by increasing their consciousness and their health, getting rid of cancer. I mean, it was all kinds of things. It was terrifying your enemies. It was controlling the elements. And we've lost it all. And it's got very powerful applications, and we can find it again and enrich our lives. And I'm so excited about your work because I think you have found much of it.
So everything that you read, was the idea of sound and music, was that consistent through everything that you were seeing?
No. It's like each age had themes. You know, like maybe 5,000-6,000 years ago, they were into balance. It's something that most people don't really even think about today. Or they would use music to sit down and meditate for an hour. And that would be its almost primary purpose. Well, it sure isn't our primary person to listen to one tone for an hour. But you'd find that in many societies, you know, like that was what the Chinese doing, but at the same time, the Hindus were tuning for an hour. Not going to take them an hour to tune, but they're tuning the audience and they're tuning themselves. So basically humming and exposing themselves to a tune. And within that tune, as your work shows, there's octaves of emotional and brain waves and all the tuning up with your body. So they're learning certain lessons at different times. And I believe that as time went forward, that the lessons that humanity was learning changed. And as they changed, the music changed. And in fact, I believe that the music changed first. So like you have a civilization and the ancient Chinese dynasty, right before it fell, about 20 years the music dropped out of existence. And then the regime dies. So I think that it's like a vibratory matrix out there, like a world of consciousness in frequencies. And we tune to different frequencies depending on the lessons that our culture has learned. be learning the lessons that could be associated with violet, and that would be like spirituality, purity, freedom. And during this time, you see like the wall dividing Germany fall, and you see communism fall in Russia, and you see a lot of positive things about freedom. But then I would say every society, in order to learn a lesson, they have to learn the positive and negative attributes associated with that lesson. For example, with purity, I would say the opposite of purity is terrorism, because they're implanting fear about your freedom to go here or freedom to go there. They're striking where you with a surprise. And if you go back through the lessons, each society, they learn the positive lesson first, and then they learn the tough side, but it's all part of the same lesson. It's like being married or something. You fall in love, and gosh, that feels good. It's great, and it's giddy, and it's wonderful. And then after you're married 10 years, man, you got all these tough lessons with your partner.
Jill, I love what you're saying. It's bringing up a very interesting question. To me, anyway, you said with the Chinese, when the music went, then the society fell.
So have you seen other examples of that? And it's just, is it vocal music? Is it instrumental music? I mean, we always have our voice. Did they outlaw singing or something? How did that happen?
Well, it happened in many ways. But each culture had a different selection of instruments, which would create a different selection of harmonic patterns. And each culture would have different rhythmic patterns. They'd have different individual flavors of music. Like ancient Chinese music would sound very different than Greek or African music. And so were their cultures. And I would suggest that part of their development of their unique culture comes from their music selection. And the other thing that happens, though it might happen afterwards, is as time rolls on, you'll note that there were languages that are all gone. In these books of antiquity, they refer to the ancient languages as languages of light. And they do that because they say that they more closely represent the vibration of a thing. And like if you were to have a CD player and you put it underneath the drum and then you threw a pile of sand on it, the music will vibrate that bottom of the drum and the sand's going to move around and it's going to create a shape. And so with that, the ancient Egyptians, for example, would do that with different sounds, and reportedly that's how they would come up with the words for their language. The words would be like a representation with shapes, or they were striving to have a language when a word equaled energetically either the action, person, place, or thing. And as these languages have fell, people have become, I believe, more like involved in the matter, further away from God, because the language becomes less powerful. And I think that's kind of good, because we say some pretty rotten things. And sticks and stones can hurt bones, but words can really hurt. And it's lessened some of the power in our ability to hurt one another. But it also has lessened the power in our voices. So the languages have changed, and the music has changed. Case in point, when the end of the last Roman civilization, during the beginning of the Dark Ages, the Catholic Church was pretty much in control, and they did outlaw music. The musicians weren't even allowed in the good cemeteries, they weren't allowed in the holy ones. Neither were actors nor singers. Poets, another one. They anything to do with the arts was considered undesirable. There were edicts out, and you can read stuff saying about do not allow your daughters to learn music. Kind of like it was a slippery slope to hell. And so you'll find a period in time where it's like almost void of music, except for in the Dark Ages. And remember, the Dark Ages was a horrible time, and music is almost outlawed, except for Gregorian chants. And the initial Gregorian chants were just one voice. There's no accompaniment. they kind of falsely, erroneously picked up some of the Greek signatures, but they missed the sacred mass in the Greek scales. So there's just one guy singing, and he's kind of like, I could go on forever, but his music doesn't have any golden means, which the music prior to did. It's based primarily on a pattern of 3, 6, and 9, and I could go into that later, but I want to answer this other question, and that is that, like you see a period where almost no music is during the Dark Ages, and look at the Dark Ages. Then let's say you see first comes Bach and Haydn that were first allowed to do music because of Martin Luther. Germany, where Martin Luther was, had broken the Catholic control. So they were now allowed to do music that was on a different system. So they start pouring out with the early classical music, and it's very ornate, and so they come out with ornate music. Ornate dress and architecture follows. And then in these readings, particular reading Theosophy, they say that the ascended masters, whatever, in these readings say that mankind had to come out of the Dark Ages, and that music had done it, and that it had pretty facade, but people had some pretty cold hearts and lack of compassion. So they talk about overlighting Beethoven, and he's very compassionate. I mean, he can make me sob just listening to him. But there's not a charity on record prior to Beethoven, only after. And it's the same, like you look at Chopin, and he's very, again, feminine. He's very artsy. He's very refined and cultured. All the refined literary groups, they start after Chopin because he brought in that gift, and he brought in that gift musically. And so it's not just, and I think it's just a couple musicians, but when you look at all the cultures, you see that the sound and the language, the things that we hear, create like vibrations that intermix with us, and they cause us to think certain thoughts, like our brain waves are vibrations, and they mix with the vibrations that we hear in our environment, and they cause certain feelings and thoughts, and that creates the epic or the civilization.
Jill, it sounds like all of this law and control is about closing people down, about, well, let's go the other end. With the music, you open the mind and integrate the brain. So who were these people in control that
didn't want the humans to have this ability to integrate their brain and think?
Well, it seems like, from what I can read, that there was a group in control with almost every society. I started with just channelings, which are by many people not very reliable, and reliable by some. But they talk about in Atlantis and Lemuria that it was the priests who controlled the music. And the you can go to the Persians, they have kings and rulers that are controlling it. Clearly, in China, it was Confucius. And the leaders of the dynasties, the jobs of the emperor were to measure the music that people sang. Measure, they didn't do it by frequency. They would do it by wavelength. So if you had a flute, it had to be certain so many inches. And that way they controlled the frequency. So they felt if they could keep everybody on the same tune, that they would be in harmony. And what happens is when their music falls, then they fall. And it seems like every society up until the Renaissance, music was always controlled. At least that's my finding. It was the Renaissance, the first time that it was opened right up. And that would be because, prior to that, musicians were in the king's court or in the church. And other than that, there was another way to make a living. So it was after that that people would start to pay for a performance. So a musician had a chance. And at that time, it kind of broke wide open.
In the cultures and the changes have been phenomenal since then.
I would like to ask a to be other ways to control people if they couldn't control it with the music. So what do you think is controlling our society today, particularly in the U.S.? We've done a couple of studies here about the frequencies put out by the TV that takes away people's initiative, but is what the church did then sort of the same thing the government is doing now? Dumb people down and keep them dumb?
Okay, I think there's two levels that I want to answer that. The first level is yes, and that it would, you know, like our electricity in the United States is about to be flat, which, again, correlates to violence and correlates to lessons of learning purity. And look at how we scour our leaders and we take them down for sexual impurities. Whereas in Europe, whose electricity is tuning them to more to an A, they seem to be more tolerant of the exact same actions. And Europe, tuning to an A, kind of a nurturing blue, is socialistic too, which is a nurturing, take care of everybody kind of a feeling. So there's many ways, and can governments put out sound and frequencies to control us? You bet. And but on a deeper level, when I looked at this, from Lemurian to Atlantic to Persian to Babylonian to China to Hindu, Egyptian, Greek, Middle Ages, when I looked at this whole thing, it appeared to me that there was patterns. And the patterns were that, in general, it seems like mankind was becoming more independent and was growing with each age further and further away from God. And in the same way of saying the same thing is more independent. So now we're our own person. But when you're your own person, it's hard to be one with all. They're kind of like in different directions. So when I look at the big picture, it looks like it was almost like some type of plan that souls are evolving into matter. And we're learning about duality, which means good and bad. And people are taking up good and evil parts. And it seems like we're evolving into matter. We're experiencing separation from God, separation from one that is. And that I believe, when I look at these patterns, that we're now starting to evolve back. And I think we can do it very quickly, simply by copying the music and the language of the past.
Well, do you think music is a self thing or a universal thing?
Well, it's kind of both. I would say, I don't know, my opinion would be that, we solid know we're vibration and we're vibration music. So I think we're our music, and that's on an individual thing. And then on a collective thing, I feel like we're a symphony. We're the song of the earth. So I think there's musical patterns that affect the society, but then each one has their own little part to play in the system.
Let's take a step, a big step backwards here, to the idea of the original Big Bang. And do you think music and sound and frequency, what part did it play then?
Well, if you look at every single religion, and that's all the ones that I mentioned, plus many of the Indian and South American, pretty much across the globe, no exceptions, including Christianity, that says in the beginning was the word, and the word's a sound, it's a vibration. And the Kabbalists took that to mean, a word is then further divided into consonants and vowels. So they would say, the Kabbalists would say the Bible means in the beginning was a consonant or a vowel, and that it's subtle energy, and it, because of the time energy in our system, it takes a while to manifest, but everybody's saying that manifestation is with sound or vibration, and that it has to continue for a while, or you have to have a certain amount of it before it manifests into physicality. And sometimes it doesn't manifest because we think, oh, I want a red coat, and then we say, oh, I want a blue coat, and then I want a green coat, and it's kind of like our thoughts cancel each other out. And if we could learn again to control our thoughts and our feelings, which are perhaps more powerful than our thoughts, then we can, and they're both vibrations, then we can start start to take back control of vibrations and see how quickly vibrations can be used to create. So I would say literally we are what we think and we are what we feel. And in time, what goes around comes around, and just another way of saying we've created what we're experiencing.
So what I hear you saying is music is really inside of us, and I know there's been music written based on your DNA, but when somebody tries to control us, they're trying to control those frequencies of music, and we should object?
Well, I think that when you look at simple little physics, it's like if you were to have a whole shopper's clock, and you had one grandfather daddy clock going tick, tock, tick, tock, and then if he had another one, just a little tiny clock, it's going tick, 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 tick. Chances are that the stronger vibration in close proximity to the smaller one is going to take it over. So the little one is going to match the big one because the big one's stronger. So it's going to go tick, tick, tick. And soon everything will be in harmony, but the prevailing vibration is going to be the one with the most power. And I think powers are feelings, you know. So if you can feel positive, and if you can feel love, and if you can feel compassion, you can feel, if you can stay within those feeling rings, you become a powerhouse. Determination, will, courage, all these things are all feelings. And they can be extraordinarily powerful. And if you look at our last 2,000 years, we have as a society, as we've involved in the matter and got further away from God or all that is, we have lost respect for our feelings. We are an intellectual society. We reward the smart, but not those that control the emotions. And I think that we can overcome any power of any frequency from anything if we are strong enough in our feelings and if we center them, you know, to center them in love.
How do you, ask a different question. Do you think music can create, because you just said something about, in the beginning was a word. Do you think music begets creative reality?
Absolutely. Even if you look at the artwork, if you look at the work of the contemporary musicians and the contemporary artists during the classical period, you'll see that the musicians start having more of dissonance first, and then you see the artists coming right afterwards with a dissonance in their paintings. And I think that one is directly related to the other. And just an aside, on my music, I did the flower symphonies because I felt that the most and the most powerful thing today in our last 2,000 years is the evolution of our feelings and to start to purify them. And the Greeks and the Chinese, all these other guys, they used to use frequencies to take out your negativity or to balance it out. And the idea that every frequency could have a positive or negative side. So I got into the Bach flower remedies because they had that, like each flower represented a feeling, which represented a positive feeling. So like one flower might be trust, and it would represent taking a fearful person and converting them into trust. And so I made the healing flower symphonies, and at first I did the negative portion of the flower, because I found that, myself included, unfortunately, and kind of shamefully, but that I had all kinds of negative stuff, and everybody else does too. And sometimes when you have a lot of sad, negative stuff, it's hard to be happy and to pull in these positive emotions. So in those flower symphonies, I started out by clearing negative emotions, and then building the positive one, and they relate, like impatience to patience, just like the ancients did. And then I embedded them, you know, with the flower remedy frequency equivalent. So it's kind of like a double whammy, but it was my attempt at emotional healing. And I find it kind of interesting personally, because I will listen to them, and I can feel in my emotional body when I'm clearing something. Like, let's say fear. It's about, 2 feet out, I'm when I'm listening to the first part of the symphony and it's sounding kind of fearful, if I'm letting go of fear, I can feel it. I can even point to the spot in my aura where it's growing out. So I know when I'm clearing, and I find it interesting that I listen to the whole CD, there's two of them, but I listen to one at a time. And one day, like, I'll clear impatience. The next day, I'll clear loneliness. But it seems like my body has some type of intelligence, and it only clears what I can handle and when I'm ready. And it doesn't, like, overpower me, so I detox. I just find that, it's kind of awe-inspiring to see the wisdom within your body. Anyway, that was my gift to help people with emotions.
Do you yourself do it with your singing or your violin or your recorded music or listening to the music of the ethers? I mean, how do you use the music to clear?
I use it in all the ways. I use it listening. I think it's stronger when you sing. It's that's probably the most powerful. And then the second might be an instrument. And then, thinking. But thinking is just a little less powerful. But if it's not appropriate to sing, I can think a song or feel, imagine in my head. And I'm getting more of a soul vibration, but I'm still getting it, just to a lesser degree. And listening. And another thing I noted, I observed this with this Hindu master, Sri Swamiji, who is, reported to be an ascended master on Earth. He's from India and has like 8 or 9 million registered followers. I've met him. He's absolutely wonderful. And he heals by music. And what he says is that how much the music heals you has a lot to do with how you listen. He said that those who, have the ears to hear, those who are willing to really put the focus and attention into the hearing are going to be receive a greater healing. He's saying that every recipient of a miracle is part of that miracle. And that, if you open up your heart, you can have more of a blessing. And, like I notice in the Bible, the same thing, there's this one little scene where Jesus is walking along. I guess he's got his cloak hanging around behind him. And some lady grabs it, and she's healed, and he feels it. And he turns around, and he says, "Your faith made you well." He didn't say, "I did." He said, "You did, because you believed, because you were part of that miracle." And I think, of course, the miracle gets credited to Jesus, but I think he spoke the truth. And that is the same with music. How you listen makes a huge difference. And this Swamiji is interesting. He says, depending on the consciousness of the audience is how he chooses his music. And depending on the openness of the audience, he chooses it, because he says that he could have more powerful music, but only if the audience is ready.
This brings me back to something totally unrelated, but totally intimately related all at the same time. When we look at some of Emoto's work, and he says he talks to water, and water holds frequency and vibration, and that if he talks to it mean, it creates bad, ugly crystals, and if he talks to it lovingly and appreciatively, it creates this wonderful symmetrical crystals. And since our body is, 90% water, could it be the water that we're affecting with our thoughts?
Absolutely. And another thing, but our lead readers might not, so I'll go into it, but that French scientist, Benavisti, he was able to prove, and it can be replicated, that water has a memory that other substances that at least haven't been shown to have, and that he was testing homeopathy medicine, and he found he could put like a drop of a homeopathic tincture in water, and then he could dilute it so much that there was 0% of it left, but then he could still transmit that signal. In other words, the water was able to retain the vibration. So, and it also dovetails to the little story I said earlier. The Egyptians were with the sound, and they would make sounds underneath drums and observe the patterns. And then those patterns would represent their hieroglyphs and the sounds that they used in the language to have this direct connection so their language was more powerful. It's the same thing. It's all that sound creates.
When you talk about Benavista's work, he was even doing this in a test tube with blood thinners. So even those frequencies, very, very diluted, and without a human being involved, so that would show that water has intention and memory and that it's alive.
Yes. Well, you know, when you go back to antiquity, they say that all things are inspirited. Like, we assume only a human is, or maybe we would be gracious enough to grant that to an animal. But the ancients say that there is a spirit in a tree, and there's a spirit in a rock. And if you really go up and be very sensitive or meditate, you know, each rock does feel different, and so does each tree. And they would say that each one of the elements is enfold as well, so that they would say that there is a being who is enfold by water and by earth and by air. And interestingly enough, throughout the ages, they would use music to copy the elements. And because the elements could copy negativity that we create, it was a source of pollution. And they did a lot of their music to clear their earth, their air, their water, and their fire.
So I think what's incredible about this conversation we're having is that we're looking at music from the beginning, from creating the universe, from creating us, and then how music is being used as power to withhold or to provide for us. And it's even written, this is so important, it's even written down in antiquity. And we take music for granted so much in this U.S. society. So I want to step back a minute and have you explain this concept you were saying about 3, 6, and 9.
Okay. First of all, when you equate numbers to music, the way that you would do that, if you had a piano, and you're going to do a scale, bum, 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 bum. You would get your little black marker out and write on each note of that scale on your piano, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 and 9 or whatever. Okay, so when you're talking about music of 3, 6, 9 patterns, you're talking about the third note, the sixth note, and the ninth note of the scale. And when you combine two notes or play them close together or at the same time, the waves combine. So you get a set of math that's different between a 1 and a 3 or a 1 and a 4. And throughout Egypt and Greece, they were very much into the golden mean, phi, and they were into sacred geometry, and they revered this number. It's when you combine musical notes or numbers about a 5 point something, it's in between 5 and 6, you get an irrational number, which is 5. And so the idea is that if, like, you had a little seed, and that seed is a plant, so it's starting to grow, and it's got different frequencies in there, and they combine. So when they combine and they get a pattern of that the end result, the irrational number, then you have a branch going off. And so it goes up straight, you get to an irrational number, the math can't be completed, and so the plant goes off to the right, and then you go up and the math completed, and then the plant goes off to the left. Interestingly enough, the math, the first branch, the math goes a little bit under 5, the second branch, the math goes a little over 5, and then it keeps going, getting closer and closer to 5, but it never reaches it.
And you're saying
so anyway,
C-H-I,
phi, like, you know, like at Da Vinci Code, like in the, they're talking about the pentagram and how the angles in the pentagram create phi, 1.16, and it's a big, long number.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. And so anyway, those
where you used to music all the time, and in fact, I believe that the whole tetrachord system in the Greek, it's based on different ways of using psi, I think, to balance the personality and develop the personality. But the Catholic Church, they wanted to stamp out the Egyptian mystics, Hermetic magic, paganism, all this stuff. They're all their enemies. And they made it illegal to do a psi interval. And they controlled everything. So they came up with scales. And interestingly enough, one of the scales, or a solfeggio, just means like you put syllable names to each step of the scale, like do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Anyway, so they came up with a solfeggio scale that was encoded in the Old Testament, which is interesting. And anyway, it's fairly popular with some groups. And it's not the same as our pianos. And it's reportedly a healing scale and has many lovely abilities. Interestingly enough, it has no fives. And the other thing about it is it's more of a mystery, I think, than I could give you facts. But the way that they discovered and coded in the Old Testament, and I just digress to say, I believe almost all the old texts, the Vedas, the Vestas, the I Ching, I think they're all encoded. But anyway, they used the Pythagorean scheme on the verse numbers, in numbers, of all things, and they came up with this scale. And there's a whole school in, like, Ohio called Somaenergetics, and they do all kinds of healing with these. In antiquity, they report healing with these scales, and the Catholic Church wouldn't let other people use it. It was theirs to heal, not for others to heal. And so anyway, when you take the solfeggio cycles per second, like 2, 5, 7 or something, if you add 2 plus 5, you get 7, and then 7 plus 7 is 14, and then 14 would be 1 plus 4 equals 5. Doing that cut, that's what you call Pythagorean scheme. When you do the Pythagorean scheme to each one of the numbers in the solfeggio tone, you get patterns of 3, 6, 9. And I just find that interesting because Kepler said that you would understand the magnificence of the universe if you understood the secrets of 3, 6, 9. And Tesla did the same thing. He had all kinds of inventions and things way beyond our capabilities. And he apparently demonstrated them. Lots of people gave him money to produce them. But anyway, he said that his secret was 3, 6, and 9. Again, he's saying that there's more power in 3, 6, and 9 than anything in the universe. So I just find that interesting that you have these scales that are patterns of 3, 6, 9, and that's all through antiquity. There's like patterns of 3, 6, 9. And then there's also other scales that have lots of fives and golden means, kind of a branching, spiraling kind of effect. And it might pique your soul, CB, since both were used for great benefit throughout time. I have both of them in my Paint Your Soul. And by reading some physicists, like Popton, some others from Stanford and stuff, they suggest that some of the most powerful frequencies are little tiny ones, perhaps like frequencies from the stars or little nature currents, little tiny ones, because he believed that they affected your paraneural tissue system, which was a cell-to-cell transfer, which is an analog signal, which is refined and powerful. Anyway, for those reasons, I had those intervals, both sets of them, made up in tuning forks instead of not on an instrument, and I put them in my Paint Your Soul CD. And then the other thing I did on the Stardust CD was that the ancient Chinese and the Persians, almost all of them, were really big into astrology, and they understood its significance, which I believe we would be wise to do so also. And they would balance out many of the difficult frequencies coming in. And I copied that and put that in my Stardust CD.
Is this also in your book? Is this the things in your book?
I do believe that I have a little bit on that, on each one, yes, in the book.
And what pieces of music in particular?
369 patterns, and then Stardust has the ancient Chinese star balancing tones. I don't know, when I meditate, I get that paint your soul is very healing on a soul level, and that Stardust is very healing on a spirit level, which is a little higher up, which kind of makes sense because in my theory, where people are involving, the people of 2,000 years before Christ were into balancing of the stars, and it wasn't later till the time of the ancient Greek civilization that they got into the nature patterns of Y and 369.
I thought I'd play some of the stardust so people can see what this is like. I don't know which is more fascinating, the books you write or the music, because the music just takes you away. So I'm looking at Jill's website, and it's jillswingsoflight.com. You do have other websites, too. Talk to people about all the ways they can get in touch with you.
Well, I think the best is to go to Jill's Wings of Light, and down at the bottom on the cover page of Jill's Wings of Light, there's a little place where you can download some MP3s for free. And if anybody's interested in sound healing or this kind of information, you can get a newsletter by downloading those free MP3s. So I would suggest that.
And you've written other books, too. Now, this other book you talked about, the Bible book, I've never even heard of that, and I've looked all over your site.
It's not published yet. It's done, but I haven't finished editing it, and I don't have the cover painted yet.
Okay.
It's coming soon, in months.
We're still listening to this, so I'm on your site. How would I find a book that you have written?
If you go to the store.
CD here? Okay.
Then you should be able to see Tibetan bowls, which are wonderful, but you know, Tibetan bowls is I don't mean to downplay it, but it's a piece of the entire spectrum of healing. And so this book of ancient science modern healing goes through a large number, like 14 different ways of using sound in a powerful modality. And some of it is ancient, and some of it is people today or scientists today who are using it and are experiencing a lot of success. So there's a lot of how-to and inexpensive ways to access this ancient sound technology. And then there's, of course, the Secret Sounds book, which has your story. And I think that's really powerful because just seeing how you develop things, it makes the claims that, like I and others say about your work, very realistic. You can see like a foundation in it, and you can see how it came about. And then I go into the middle section, which some people will really like, and others could skip. But it's more technical, like what kind of scientific evidence supports different pieces of your work, and some of the premises, and some of the theories. It also relates it to color astrology, to music, to personalities, to astrology, to the environment, to sacred geometry. And then the third part of the book is applications. And that starts with all the gifts that you have to offer and how to use them. And a particular interest is the Nano Voice, which is a free program at nanovoice.org. And it goes into maybe the science of tone and personality. And then it goes on and introduces, four or five different ancient applications of sound that I felt in some way, tangentially, kind of modeled what you were doing. either by using your voice to invoke personality changes or using tonal qualities to change relationships or heal your body and so forth.
It says on your website that Secret Sounds Ultimate Healing is a CD. Have you also read it and made that available that way?
No, that must be a mistake. It's not on the CD.
Okay. Just checking here. The artwork on your albums and books are just exquisite. And I understand you've done all of those.
Thank you. Yes. I don't know. It's almost the same energy that paints that does me sick.
I understand that you are going to be doing some book signings. There's going to be two here near us in Ohio. Are you appearing anyplace else?
Well, I just set up two workshops in the Philadelphia area and the New Jersey area for the spring, and I would very much like to have more if anybody's interested. I would love to do more radio shows and to speak more. I think that the work that's been given to me would be a great blessing to others, and I would love the chance to give it and share it.
I understand, too, that the ones that you're doing here in late September, you're going to be giving away some of your artwork. So if anyone's near, it is well worth the travel time to travel to Ohio and meet with Jill, hear what she has to say, have her sign the books for you, and also to receive, if we have any left, some of her artwork. So, Jill, it has been an extreme pleasure to have you on with us. If people want to write to you directly, how would they do that?
My email is Jill, J-I-L-L-I, Matson, M-A-T-T-S-O-N, at yahoo.com.
So you welcome invitations to speak and be part of other expos, to do demonstrations. Do you also do concerts?
Yes, I just did one at Life Spectrums, and I spoke on the featured speaker for the entire week. And that was a blast because you could really get into things. And at the end, you had people doing all kinds of incredible things because we were able to talk on with 40 hours of lecture, and it wasn't all lecture, it was like a lot of it was just play. They were able to mix and match all the different ways of using sound healing for powerful kind of immediate results, and that was really fun.
Jill, I would have liked to know more about that. If you'll send us things like that that you're going to be doing, we will announce it on our radio show and certainly put an announcement up on our website, Sound Health Options.
Okay.
That would be absolutely awesome. We will have Jill on with us again many times. She is an absolute deep well of information, and she comes from the heart, and that's our favorite part about her. So thank you, Jill.
Thank you, and I'm very honored to be on your show.
And thank all of you for joining us here on Blog Talk Radio, and we hope to be with you next week.
Okay, we have next week coming. It'll be about 9/11. As I said in the beginning, we are going to be talking about some little-known facts of how we were involved in 9/11 and some of the work that we did there. And I'm going to announce the reversal or the cure, I'm not allowed to say cure, of the fireman's cough. So if any of you know anybody that was involved there, or they have the fireman's cough, please join us next week. We're also looking at some of Jill's artwork, if you're with us on WebEx. And one of the most exquisite things that Jill brought to me was this idea of 3, 6, and 9. And for you practitioners who are with us on WebEx and online here, use your starter wheel and make a base, whatever you want it to be, notice C, and then look at the positions 3, 6, and 9. And you'll see that's a very profound piece of what you are doing as practitioners as you learn how to use these frequencies and formulas to reverse people's disease, like the big Parkinson's thing that we're doing right now and helping people reverse their tremors and reverse their inability to smell and reverse some of the brain damage and some of the nerve damage that's been going on. So we want you to look at that, and some of you are familiar with our trimester, which is taking the dimensions of 3, 6, and 9 and building pyramids out of that. And we put them together in the shadow of 3, 6, and 9 pyramids equals the Maltese cross. The shadow creates the Maltese cross. And if any of you are familiar with history, when you conquer a people, the first thing you want to take away from them is their language and their religion and their folklore and their ability to communicate and tie and hold together as a community. And so when people were conquered, countries were conquered, peoples were conquered, they hid their information. And I think this idea about 3, 6, and 9 in the Bible and the Book of Numbers, I think is a profoundly important piece of information for humanity. And that's what we do at Sound Health. In the week-long course, we teach you to use those formulas and those frequencies that Joe has written about and encourage you to be a part of the guardians of the people and changing people and, not changing, supporting people, allowing them to have dominion over their health. I believe that Obamacare was written for two reasons. One, as population control, because it clearly says in there that they can limit your health care, and they can tell you exactly when you have to die. Any of you who would like an evaluation of Obamacare and what's in it and pages, send me your email and I will get it back to you. It's Sherry, Sharry, on air at gmail.com, as you hear me typing here. So Sherry, Sharry, on air at gmail.com. So write to me, and we'll talk about this further next week. But I want to leave you with something. I love the mail that you guys send. I don't always get to it. But we just got something very, very important from Jerry, and I think I ought to pass it on. And it's a long message, but he says short version that people are starting to set baby car carriers with a blanket over it alongside the road, thinking that people are going to think people abandon a baby and they're going to stop. Well, it's a form of robbery and abduction, and that people should watch out. Just call the police. Don't get out of your car. Don't stop. Just call 911. Also, that people are throwing eggs at cars, and on the windshield in particular. And when you try to clean up the eggs with your windshield wiper, it creates a mess and you can't see at all, and you have to get out and clean your windshield. And that's also another way for them to get you to stop. It says these are desperate times, and please stay safe. And I think it's desperate times because there's a movement out that doesn't want us to trust each other. Janet Napolitano put a big thing out that they're going to put spies and whatever and cameras and stuff in Walmart to watch people, to get us to watch our neighbors, to get us to tell on our neighbors, to talk to our children at school about what TV you watch and do you smoke marijuana and those things are turning people against each other, and we should turn against that idea and come together as a loving humanity that we are. Be safe, but be kind. And if you want to order Jill's book, I've got it up on the website. Just give us a call or go to Sound Health Options. I'm going to put up the phone number where you can call and get a copy of her book. I'm sure you can get a copy on her website. We will be open on Tuesday. Thank you for being with us. We certainly appreciate your participation. Without you, we wouldn't have anybody listening to what we have to say. So we love you being here, and I certainly appreciate all of the mail that you send. I will try to share a lot of it next week when we're going to talk about the government interference in healthcare, and particularly the government interference in healthcare for the firemen and the first responders. And did you know that they're not even going to be allowed at the celebration, the 10-year celebration? They are not allowing the first responders. The people responsible for saving all the lives are not going to be allowed to be there. The politicians can be there. The people who made money from rebuilding, although those people will be there, they're not allowing clergy to be there. We've lost our faith, or somebody is pushing us to lose our faith. Our strength in a higher being, our confidence and foundation by having a community of people who care about us. Thank you for being here. Please stay tuned. Or I should say, please stay in touch. And remember, happy hour is not going to be going on tomorrow, but the next week. I may be wrong on that. I can't remember. It's every other Tuesday. Check out the website and you'll see when happy hour is. We'll be glad to do some profiles for you. And we'll talk later.